So with your host, MZ.
You know, Rick, this is Santa Cruz.
It is.
And so it very well could have been a dead dog running around. Everything else is different around here. Right? So.
Just rub it in.
No, you're great. It's great. You know, it's the technical difficulties are the best on this station. And the thing, and the mistakes, out of people's mouths are the greatest on the station of anywhere. So you're the best. You're the best.
Cool.
Hey, it's cool for you to be here today. You're fast becoming the guy with the most on-air experience around this station.
I might just have 24-hour board shifts 7 days a week.
Holy Chris, how do you do it? I mean, you must really love radio. Are you sick of it yet?
Not quite.
I mean,
but I feel something moving in my stomach.
Okay. Okay. Well, we're going to do an open mic Saturday special today. We haven't done this in a long time. So since you're in control, fire away.
Good morning. A brighter day is here. Good morning. May we bring you cheer.
We've got time. We've got tunes. We've got time, tunes, and temperature.
Get up and go. It's today, you know, on KSCO Radio.
Good morning, Monterey Bay and world. Because we are being streamed worldwide on the World Wide Web. And I'm wondering how many people listen to us. How many of you people out there listen to us on the World Wide Web? Maybe we can put that out and get some people calling from all parts of the world on Skype out or whatever. Is it possible that more people are listening to us on the web than on over the air?
Good morning. Now stay right here on KSCO Radio.
All right, that's our special fanfare music bid. Usually means we're going to have someone special on, but today it doesn't mean that. At least we don't think, because it's just me and Rick.
You're quite special, MC.
Oh, no. That's the kindest thing anybody's ever said. No one ever says, in fact, MZ is usually the target of everyone's abuse. But that's not really true. What I have to do occasionally is put it out on the air. Last week we had a great Saturday special about Agenda 21. And at the very end of the program, I happened to mention that nobody had taken me to lunch in ages. I take everybody else to lunch, or I'm willing to, and most people decline. You know, but I said I would love it if someone would take me to lunch, and I was hoping someone would call, and someone did. A nice person called, but I had already accepted an invitation for lunch by the guests of the program. It was Jeannie Soderman and Gary Arnold, and Gary was gracious, and it was great. We had a wonderful lunch. And had a great time, but I'm gonna have to just sort of get into the habit of asking who wants to take me to lunch more, because then I might get taken to lunch more. All right, welcome to the Saturday special, 10 past 10 on your favorite radio station, AM 1080 KSCO, caller driven program today, open mic. I will start it off with a couple of subjects. One is very, very sad. Anybody who listens to the news on this station, or reads the local news papers, or listens to local news on other media, or watches local news, will know that there was a young woman who was murdered up in the Ben Lomond area sometime during the last week. The body was found and identified on Thursday. And, of course, it's a terrible thing that a homicide can and does happen. But this one hits close to home, because I didn't meet the person whose name was Asha Vale, 28 years old, from Ben Lomond. But there was a significant connection to the radio station here. I don't know if our listeners can remember an ad that ran probably for a couple months, 2 to 3 month period actually, a while back, for one of our advertisers and special friend, Bill Lambert, Lambert Moving. And this was a woman who got on. It was a great, wonderfully produced ad. Who said, "I'm Asha Vale," sort of a heavy Polish accent. She said she was from Poland and was talking about the wonderful experiences she had, lickety-split, being moved really quickly and very inexpensively by Bill. And it turns out that this is the person who was murdered. So that's just awful. People around here at the radio station who met her when she recorded the ads and came down and delivered a few things and so forth. We're all very, very sad, and boy, I sure hope they catch the culprit real fast. And you know, it's hard not to feel just really angry and really vengeful, and just want to see this guy or whoever it was who did this just suffer miserably. Just what reason could one have to do that? Anyhow, so I wanted to, not to depress everybody, but that is, it's part of life and it's a reality here. As I said, I didn't know Asha, hadn't met her, but I felt like I did because I heard that ad. It was a real upbeat, positive ad that ran for quite a while. Anyhow, other local news. I'm delighted to see this, being a local yokel type, who was sad when this station was sold in 1986 to an out-of-area broadcast group. Turned out to be a great group of people, Fuller Jeffrey, who really planned to make this their crown jewel community radio station, KSCO. But it didn't work out that way. And about 5 years later, they sold the radio station to the Zwirling family. And as a native, I looked forward to doing a talk radio format on this radio station, because if there was ever a town that has a lot to talk about and a lot of intelligent people from all different perspectives to do the talking, it's this town. And it's hard to believe that come this next January, that will be 16 years ago. That we purchased the radio station and it went back into local hands. And according to the front page of the Santa Cruz Sentinel today, there is a very good possibility that the Santa Cruz Sentinel, which has not been in local hands since, I believe, 1982, may well be coming back into local hands. Apparently, there's a couple of interested parties, one of which is a Santa Cruz group. And headed up by a friend of mine named Jeff Dunn. I didn't even know about this. Jeff and I sort of are ships that pass in the night sometimes. Good guy. Couldn't be a better person. And I really hope this deal comes together and they are the high bidder or somehow are successful in acquiring the newspaper, the Santa Cruz Sentinel daily newspaper from Ottawa, which is a division of Dow Jones. So that would be great if the Sentinel would come back into local hands. And we've got the call out for Jeff to maybe call in a little later on during the program. I had planned to actually talk about media and how the media is largely owned for many, many years now by increasingly larger companies, mega conglomerates and so forth. And for there to be a local radio station like KSCO, locally family-owned and operated, is almost unheard of. We're pretty much the last of the Mohicans. Certainly that's the way it is with daily newspapers, so it would be really cool if this thing happened. And the FCC is talking now about doing something that I think would be really stupid, but there's a very good chance they're going to do it anyhow. They've pretty much destroyed the radio business, as far as I'm concerned, through the Communications Act of 1996, which essentially, not truly, but essentially, lifted all ownership limits of companies. When I got into this business 16 years ago, almost 16 years ago, the same owner could own one AM and one FM station in the same market. Then a year or two later, it was changed to two AMs and two FMs. And in 1996, it just became absolutely ridiculous. And that's why Clear Channel and, you know, CBS Infinity, one or two other companies pretty much control all of the media, all the electronic media in this country. And that cannot be good for the general public, ladies and gentlemen. That's my opinion. If you disagree, that could be a topic of discussion today on this open mic program. Let's see. Another thing that actually it happened a couple of weeks ago, the tragic death of Steve Irwin, the crocodile hunter, from a stingray sting into the heart, pierced his heart. We all know about that. And this is news that probably, you know, will be around for a while. And shortly after I heard that sad bit of news, I thought of something. I said, well, I've done some swimming with the stingrays. As the guest of the gracious Dr. Wallach, who does the daily Dead Doctors Don't Lie talk radio program, which originates here and is goes out to quite a number of stations throughout the United States, and worldwide on the internet via podcast. And one of the things that Doc did for us is invited us to swim with the stingrays. And I think it was in 1998, and this is something that he does all the time. Anyhow, Doc happened to call me a day or two after this happened to talk about something else, and I said, hey, Doc, you know those stingrays we swam with back in 1998? He said, yeah. I said, they were de-stingerized, weren't they? And he says, no. And I said, whoops. He says, no, Michael, no, it didn't happen, though. Anyhow, guess who we've got with us today as a special guest, not to talk about health? It's Doc Wallach. Hey, Doc.
Hey, how you doing, Michael?
Very good, very good. Hey, so yeah, now that we've got you know, we can catch our breath here. Tell me what you think happened with Steve Irwin. I mean, stingrays don't go around stinging people, right?
That's true. Primarily, stingrays want to avoid people, and when they see you thrashing around in the water, they're going to want to go in the other direction. And, of course, the stingrays that you and I swam with were essentially not tame, but they were familiar with people. For 40 years in the Cayman Islands, there's a little cove called Stingray City. And Jacques Cousteau did a nice program on them. For over 40 years, the fishermen have been feeding them. And, you know, as they cleaned the fish, they'd throw the chunks of fish out there, and the stingrays began to come around. And 40, 50, sometimes 75 or 100 of them will come around. When they hear those anchor chains going down, they just sort of flock around there knowing they're going to get fed. And so they become familiar with people, and they're tolerant of people. And when you feed them enough, they will nuzzle up against you, and you can kind of hold your arms out, and they'll swim right up into your arms and let you cuddle them and everything.
That's exactly what I did. It was amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing. But it was a 40-year process. And, of course, I don't know if Steve had gone to the Cayman Islands and got the idea for that show from the Cayman Island Stingray City situation. But remember, those are not tame, but animals, wild animals that are familiar with humans and tolerate humans in exchange for food, a handful of squid or something like that. And the worst thing that has happened there, in my knowledge, in the 40 years, is you get a little hickey on you, because if you run out of squid, they'll start, if you smell like squid, they'll suck a big hickey on your skin.
They don't have teeth, right?
They don't have teeth, but they have what's called grinding cartilage, and they do have these little cartilage ledges, if you will, in their mouth. And their mouth is about, I don't know, 4 to 6 inches wide, and they have a cartilage ledge on the upper part of their mouth and the lower part of their mouth, and they just sort of grind them back and forth, and they smash shellfish and snails and things that are tough, like squid and octopus. That's their primary food. And if you get your fingers in there, they just kind of grind your finger. But most people are smart, you know, just like when you hold a handful of grain to a horse, you hold it on the palm of your hand so they don't nibble your fingers, in the same way with the stingrays. It's acceptable to the stingray, and nobody gets injured. But again, these are conditioned stingrays in Stingray City. And, gosh, we've been going there for 10 years, since 1996. And three or four times a year, bringing people associated with us who do a good job of helping lots of other people with their health, we take them out and reward them for a week in the Cayman Islands. It's a lot of fun, and they get to do something in their wildest dreams they never get to do, is swim with the stingrays at Stingray City.
It was a unique experience, for sure.
Yeah, it's a kind of a once in a lifetime thing, and you'll never forget it. And we actually in the old days when we first started, we had videos. Everybody got a video, and then more recently, in the last couple of years, we get them DVDs of the experience. We have underwater cameramen taking pictures of all this, and so people can prove it, that they've done it. And so I hope people are breaking their videos and their CDs out and DVDs and saying, look at this, here's us doing what, unfortunately, Steve Irwin got nailed on.
So it's a pretty, I mean, we'll never know for sure unless they decide to release that
movie. I think eventually they will release the film.
Uh-huh.
I think they will. It's one of those tragic things where I think just hearing the initial description before they got kind of hush-hush, they were filming on the Great Barrier Reef. And you get any animal backed up against something they can't escape from. They're going to be defensively aggressive, and apparently Steve was in front of the animal, and they have a long whiplash, kind of like a whip antenna tail, and about a third of the way down from the body is this stinger that's the diameter of a ballpoint pen, about the same length as a ballpoint pen, about 6 to 8 inches long.
That's all it is?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And it's laying down in the tail on a sheath. And unless you know what you're looking for, you'll never see it when they're not in their defensive mode.
Uh-huh.
Well, when they bring that stinger to bear, so to speak, to unsheath it, it stands up at a 45-degree angle from the tail. It's very noticeable at that point. And that's when they're alarmed. When they get in their alarm mode, they will kind of show you their stinger, saying, you know, just like a rattlesnake will, not always, but oftentimes rattles, and they're telling you they're alarmed, you're too close, back off, go around them. Well, same thing is true with the stingray. They start getting very agitated, and they'll raise that stinger when they get alarmed. And then they whip that tail over their back to where the stinger just lands right in front of their head, for about anywhere from 6 inches to 18 inches ahead of their face. And, of course, Steve Irwin was in front of him and got nailed with that stinger in between the ribs, and it got into his heart. And just the stinger alone would have killed him. It would be like a dagger hitting him in the heart. But they also have about 10 cc's of poison that comes out of there, about like a tablespoon of poison. And so between the stinger...
I'm it's interesting that you say that, because I was watching the news news accounts on I think it was NBC, and they actually said that the venom on these stingers has a minor effect on humans.
Yes.
And that certainly would not have killed him. It's really the injury to the heart that probably opened, you know, that wrecked the heart, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Now, but if he'd have been stung in the legs or the back or something like that, or the arm, he'd have been in the hospital for a couple of days, get some cortisone shots, and he'd be out chasing crocodiles again. But the fact that it struck him right in the heart, it was like a dagger to the heart, plus the poison, which is normally sort of a bee sting. It's enough to overwhelm their food. If a fish or a shark or something like that comes around, they can eat the fish and run the shark off. But when you get that poison directed directly into the heart, plus the mechanical injury of being hit with this 6-foot tail with the dagger on it, nailing you, that's a tremendous impact.
Okay. Explain this to me, because it was only very coincidentally, maybe 5 or 6 days before this tragic event, where I happened to be, I like to explore and, you know, just discover new places, and I was exploring, the Berkeley Pier. I walked out on the end of this long pier, it's almost a mile long, and at the very end of the pier, there was a interesting character who was fishing, and while I was talking to the interesting character who was fishing, he caught not one, but 2 bat rays. and he landed one of them. One of them fell off the hook before he landed it, but the other one he brought up onto the pier and gave me sort of an anatomy lesson of a ray. This literally days before this thing happened with Steve Irwin. And I was surprised to see, because he pointed out the stinger, you know, and he said, and he actually lifted it up a little bit, and I can see. And all this time, I thought the stinger on a stingray was at the end of the tail, which I always thought was sort of blunt, but I said, well, somewhere in there, there's a stinger. It has nothing to do with the end of the tail. It's
no,
way
it's
up.
It's way down. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's more part of the spine than the tail, right?
Yes. It's kind of like, you know, when you see a dog that gets alarmed, the hair raises up on their back.
Yeah.
It's the same principle. There's muscles that actually pull on those hairs to pull them in that direction. So that's kind of alert to somebody saying, ooh, this dog is agitated because the hair is standing up on him. Same way with us. You get that your hair stands up on the back of your neck. You're walking through a graveyard in the middle of the night and on Halloween. And there's a full moon out there and you hear the coyotes howling and the hair on your neck. If you're not used to that kind of thing, the hair on your neck will stand up. That's a kind of alarm situation. The same thing is true with stingrays. When they get alarmed, the muscles, it's actually an involuntary thing. It's not things that they control. It's an involuntary thing that they get alarmed, and their fight or flight hormones start circulating around, and the muscles contract and bring that stinger out to where it's in a position where it can nail you if they whip you with their tail.
Now, I've always wondered, I don't want this to be a morbid show, but golly, I've got the opportunity to ask you, and I'm sure you have the answer to this question. I have heard it said about Steve Irwin that he probably died instantly. And, you know, I've always wondered, you know, when someone gets mortally wounded, like, you know, John Lennon, for example, who was shot in December of 1980, people don't normally get killed instantly. They I mean, it's horrible, but don't they know that they're dying?
It depends. In his case, I don't think he knew he was dying. I did hear little pieces, and again, these are from the news reports that some people claim, you know, the people who were underwater with him, that he actually pulled the tail and the stinger out of his chest.
I heard that, and a person can't have been killed instantly if he did that, you know.
Exactly. So. And, you know, even if you get shot in the heart, it takes you a couple of moments to die. It's not an instant thing.
Yeah, that's what I always thought.
Yeah.
So, I mean.
Sometimes, it depends, you know, for instance, if you get shot through the heart, if it's a big enough caliber, you die of shock before you bleed to death. Just the impact of a large caliber bullet going at a high rate of speed, just the shock of the impact will kill you. And you could die what would be considered instantly. You hear people, you know, you hear news reports, so-and-so was killed in a car wreck, and they died instantly.
Yeah, I could believe that.
Yeah, it's usually from shock, head being crushed, these types of things. Of course, a head wound, a shot in the head, you're going to die essentially instantly, although your heart would still be beating. And when you see people are animals in the process of dying, even if they've been shot in the head, they're still moving around a little bit, and you hope and you pray that they're going to survive. But if they've been shot in the head with a large caliber weapon, or been squished by a large animal, they're pretty much committed to die at that point.
Right, and I've heard the story everybody has about, you know, popping the chicken's head off, you know, at the farms. You know all about that because you grew up on a farm in Missouri. I mean, is that true that you the way you kill chickens is there's a certain way to pop the head off?
Is that
a wives' tale?
No, back in the old days, you didn't want to pop the head off because there'd be blood everywhere. You know, the carotid arteries are squirting blood everywhere, and it's a mess. You track flies and. So people learned how to do it a little more sophisticated than that. You could actually stretch the chicken's neck and separate the spinal cord and the vertebrae so that they would bleed within the cervical skin. They would bleed within the neck, and also you'd transect or break the spinal cord in two, and they would die. But they would flop. They wouldn't run around. People say,
I've heard. So that's not true? That's a wives' tale?
No, they flop around, and they can flop 30, 40 yards, flopping here and there. Especially animals that have a primitive brain.
Uh-huh.
And if you're not real good about, if you cut the neck of a chicken where the neck enters the body, it pretty much dies instantly. But if you separate the neck from the brain at the base of the skull, they might flop around quite a bit because there's still pieces of the brain stem attached. It is pretty gruesome for people who've never seen anything like that. Now they're killed more humanely with electricity and carbon monoxide and things of that nature.
Okay, as long as we started it, let me ask you this question, which I've always wondered. Is not death by hanging, you know, hanging a human, is that not actually a pretty humane way to die? Because that, I would imagine the person does indeed die instantly as soon as his neck is snapped. And
well, if the hangman does a good job of knotting the rope and putting the knot in the right place so the neck is broken instantly at the end of the length of the rope, it is a humane way to die. However, hangmen were not equally trained and talented. And there's a lot of, a lot, could be as many as 50%, where they don't do a good job, and people don't die instantly, and it's a nasty thing of seeing them kick around and turn blue and jerk around, and it might take them a couple of minutes to die, then it's not humane.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, and so it depends on
the
skill.
And I guess the person didn't have a lot of weight.
It had nothing to do with the weight. It had to do with the skill of the hangman. And that was really the reason why the French came up with the guillotine, was to ensure that the executions were humane and occurred instantly without any possibility of having to do it two and three times.
Yeah, what changed? Why don't they do it that way here instead of the gas chamber, instead of lethal injection and all the things that they do? That makes a lot of sense to me, and death has got to be pretty instant there, too.
Yeah, probably the two most consistently humane ways to execute people, you know, in the legal sense, when the courts of law and juries determine that somebody's supposed to die, I guess there's three ways it can be done humanely, and that is, of course, lethal injection. It's no different than anesthetizing somebody. You just over-anesthetize them is how it works. And so you just peacefully go to sleep. It's the moments before you get the injection. It's the moments before, as in Utah, they still use firing squads. So in Utah, it's the moments before you get shot that's the scariest part for somebody who's about to be killed, because you know you're going to be killed. And the same way is with the guillotine. It's the moments beforehand that is the problem. And so the types of you know, you want to get into capital punishment. You know, there's so many people. Some people say we got to kill murderers. Get them off the street. Even if it doesn't deter anybody else, it gets this one off the street. And then you have people who say, well, there's no deterrent. And the way that there's no deterrent in any form of capital punishment today. There's no deterrent in capital punishment today. And that's because in the old days when it was begun, it was a very, not only ruthless way to kill people, but it was also something that lasted for weeks and weeks and weeks with the same poor devil. When they would hang somebody, they wouldn't take the body down and bury him and whisk him off, you know, secretly in the middle of the night. They would leave the body decomposed hanging on the tree. And the crows would pick their eyes out and the dogs would drag their leg around town and they'd say, whew, I don't want to wind up like that. And that was a deterrent.
That's a deterrent, right.
That's a deterrent.
Oh, my
and
God. So we might
stopped.
As well not even have the death penalty, right? Because it's not a deterrent.
The way they're doing it now, it's not a deterrent. In the old days, you know, when they would draw and quarter you and tie a horse to each limb, you know, one horse to each arm and a horse to each leg.
Yeah.
And they'd whip the horses and the horse would yank you apart and drag your leg and part of your torso and your intestines dragging all over the place. And say, whew, what a terrible way to die. I think I'm going to be nice. I'm not going to hurt anybody because I don't want to wind up like that. And so those were deterrents. Now the way capital punishment is done is not a deterrent. They might as well just have life imprisonment without possibility of parole.
Except it costs more, probably, right?
Yeah, it costs more. It costs the taxpayers to keep them in jail.
Yeah.
That's always the way.
We're talking with Dr. Joel Wallach here on a lot of people in our audience who've heard Doc for years on Dead Doctors Don't Lie, alternative health program that we proudly produce here every day for the last decade or so. But a lot of people don't realize that Doc has an amazing, just an armload of credentials as far as wild animals is concerned, are concerned. And in fact, you worked with the ultimate person in that regard in terms of respect, and that would be Marlon Perkins of Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom, right?
Yes, I was blessed to work with him for many years, and he was the one who helped me get my job in Africa working on conservation projects with the white rhino and elephant. In fact, almost all the white rhino you see born in zoos today were born to the ones that I caught in South Africa. And so I was very proud of that, having to do with that big project to save the white rhino. We've pretty much done a good job. They're not endangered anymore.
And I've seen a really neat movie of you doing that, of you catching rhinos. And is that movie available on any website or anything?
Actually, I think it is. TheWallachFiles.com.
The Wallach Files or just Wallach?
The Wallach Files. The X-Files, TheWallachFiles.com. There's a little... I think there's a 30-second piece of me crawling through the grass and getting up on my knees and tranquilizing some rhino and things. And caught over 100 rhino and caught over 100 elephant. And it was quite the experience for a 24-year-old newly graduated veterinarian to go to Africa. And, of course, I could have never done that without the help of Marlon Perkins. He was such a great gentleman. And although I think Steve Irwin was a... offshoot or result of Marlon Perkins, because everybody wanted to kind of fill his shoes when he died at age 82, I believe. A great gentleman. And, of course, he had his own distinguished flair. I think just people just revered Marlon Perkins because he was a very distinguished gentleman. But he had his flair, and I think the best show they liked to him was when he was wrestling the anaconda in the Amazon River. Everybody always asked me, did he really wrestle that anaconda? Well, he was a snake.
Or was that a stand-in?
No, that was really Marlon Perkins. That was his thing. He loved reptiles, and he was really big on handling reptiles. That's how he grew up in the zoo and the wildlife business.
So chances are Steve Irwin saw that, right? Somewhere that was photographed or filmed?
Sure, exactly. Uh-huh. And Steve was kind of outrageous in the stuff that he did. And, you know, I guess today to get the same amount of attention, you had to be a little more outrageous than Marlon Perkins. And
he was pretty dignified, as I recall, you know.
Marlon Perkins was a very distinguished gentleman. And he could have been a movie star because he was good. He could remember lines, and he was good at handling animals. And I was always amazed that they never made a movie with him because he was such a distinguished-looking guy and had a lot of skills and a lot of knowledge and was always so gracious. I thought he'd have made a good movie star for certain. I mean, he'd have been good, you know, for the King Kong movie and things like that. He was really quite good. Now, Steve Irwin... I actually met him once.
I was going to ask. You did meet him in Australia?
Yeah, I did meet him and his wife, And we go to Australia, two, three times a year. We have a lot of lectures that we do in Australia, New Zealand, and Singapore, and that part of the world, and Japan, and so on. And he's very good. Steve was very good, and it's just he was always putting his toes just a little over the free throw line and always...
pushing the envelope, huh?
Yeah, pushing the envelope a little bit, and, you know, the odds are it's going to get you one day, and I was always a little nervous for him about that, but he was very fast, very good, and the secret is to know the animal's limits, and, of course, that's where myself growing up on the farm always dealt, even though I only weighed 127 pounds when I was an adult, I worked with large animals, a lot of bulls that weighed over 2,000 pounds and learned their limits and learned how to get out of their way when they were alarmed and could deal with them. And that's how I got my first job as a 14-year-old at the St. Louis Zoo. Every summer, kids would go to get a job at the St. Louis Zoo, and they'd go up and down the line and say, anybody here have experience with big animals? And everybody said, well, I deal with rabbits. Well, and then I said, well, yeah, I do. And they said, well, what animals? And I said, well, bulls and cattle and horses. They just grabbed me by the shirt and took me up to the front office and gave me my job the first time I applied.
Oh, wow.
And I got to work with elephants, and I learned the limits of elephants, you know, their physical limits. And so you never get yourself in a position where you can't escape or dodge or whatever. You have to be alert. There's always a possibility you'll step on a stone and fall down. Well, then you're going to get injured or killed. But as long as you can keep your feet and stay out of their way, I've only been run up a tree twice by a rhino, and I've been run up a tree once by an elephant. I've had a couple of close calls with elephants and rhino. But as long as you know the limits, the odds are you're going to be okay. But if you push those limits, if you get within their range and you don't have the ability to get out of their range, if they get agitated enough, they will nail you.
Right. You're listening to the Saturday Special with MZ here in Santa Cruz at KSCO Studios, and Doc Wallach, who is in, I believe, Syracuse, New York. Am I right?
Syracuse, New York. Yep.
I don't think anybody travels more than you do. I mean, you must have enough frequent flyer miles to never ever have to pay for an air ticket for the rest of your or your heirs' lives.
They don't give you air miles for the ones you cash in. So about half my miles are free, and I do pretty close to a half a million miles a year. Circumvent the globe 4 or 5 times a year, and it's just really a treat. I get to do a lot of my writing, books and scripts for my presentations and things on long airplane rides. People always say, when do you have time to write your books? Well, it's on airplanes. And so it was really a blessing to get laptop computers and things like that. So you get a lot done.
When I first became acquainted with you, Doc, I remember actually not believing. I figured you were exaggerating that you do 300, you're traveling 300 days a year back then, about 12, 14 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I found out that it was not an exaggeration. It's absolutely true. It was, and I think it still is. Am I right?
Yeah, it's pretty much still true today. And of course, we're growing all over the world. And we're now registered and trademarked in 25 countries. And every time you open up a new country, you got to go there 4, 5, 6, 8, 10 times a year, depending on the speed of activity and growth in those areas. And it's really refreshing. You know, you go to a country like Australia or New Zealand or Canada or Mexico or Japan, Singapore, England. Italy looks real good right now. We'll be working hard in Italy. And you got to go there a lot to get the concept instilled into a group of people who are then going to carry on the message between my visits. And then it really, really grows. It's been very exciting to see the same thing that's happened here in the United States happen in these other countries, because people do want to have long, healthy, prosperous lives. And obviously the powers that be in the medical world and political world, the recipes are using are not really that good. We rank 46th in the world when it comes to health and longevity. There's 45 other countries whose people live longer than we do, even though we spend more money for health care than all the other 190-plus nations in the world put together. We spend more money than all of them put together, and yet we only rank 46th. Tells you that it's a bad recipe. Our health care system sucks. It's a failed and corrupt system. And by educating people to take care of themselves, we'll be able to help ourselves. And if we don't help ourselves, we're waiting for the government, we're waiting for the medical industry to do that. I mean, even the Business Week magazine calls them the medical industry now. They don't call them the medical profession anymore. And think tanks are now saying that primary care physicians and family doctors by the year 2025 will be gone. They'll be a thing of the past because they're just failing us. Everybody knows they're failing us.
Well, the system's more than the people, right? I mean, the people.
Well, it's a little of both money, because the people who are involved with the system know the same thing I do. It's not that they're ignorant. It's just they make a choice. They say, well, you know, I'm liable to lose my license or I'll lose my hospital privileges if I start doing the right thing. Well, then they have to suffer the results of their choice. And so they can't, you know, the average lifespan of a medical doctor is 56 in America. The average lifespan of professional couch potato is 75. And so if you want a long life, you want to be a professional couch potato, you don't want to be a physician. What do doctors die from? Medical doctors in America die from cancer, diabetes, heart disease, stroke, and Alzheimer's disease. So why do people go to a group of individuals whose average lifespan is 56? They die from cancer, diabetes, heart disease, stroke, and Alzheimer's disease. And it doesn't make sense. And so our idea is to be the, I want to be the Home Depot and the AutoZone of health. Every time somebody thinks about their health are going to say, oh, I better check and see what Wallach says in one of his books or listen to one of my tapes.
Your books are very easy reading. They're not too technical, that's for sure.
Yeah, we try to get things down where people can educate themselves. If they can read the fifth grade reading level, they can understand these books. If they can make an oatmeal cookie from a recipe, they can take care of about 95% of what they would go to a doctor for normally.
Sure. Well, that's great. Yeah, so for those of you who are interested, and just about everybody is, particularly with the baby boomers hitting 60 now, am I right? Yeah, that's true, this year.
Yep, they're 40-something to 64.
Yeah, there's no reason why you can't live a lot longer than 75 years old. So, I mean, that's what Doc is all about, but there's a lot more to Doc than just a pretty face.
That's right.
Hey, thanks for being with us, Doc. I know you probably
we have a meeting here.
You're probably late for the next thing on your agenda here.
Yeah, I had three meetings today. One at 9, one at 1 o'clock here Eastern, 2 o'clock Eastern time, and one at 7 p.m. So I have three meetings today, and got to keep busy.
All right. Okay. You sure do. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Michael.
See you on Dead Doctors Don't Lie weekdays at noon.
That's right.
To 1.
That's the only time they won't.
Yeah. And also, check out thewallachfiles.com, and you'll find a lot of good stuff there. A lot of interesting stuff.
Okay.
Take care.
Thank you, Michael.
Have a good one. See ya. Okay. It's 10:46. It is 10:46 on your favorite radio station, AM 1080 KSCO. We've got phone lines available. We've got a couple people online right now, and we're going to take a commercial break and come back if you want to call and set the subject on this open mic edition of the KSCO Saturday Special. You're certainly welcome to. The phone number is 479-1080. The email address is mz@ksco.com, and we'll be right back after this group of commercial announcements. Stay with us.
Tired of monkeying around with broken sprinkler heads and smelly lawn mowers? Weeds and dry patches make you scream, growling over your decision to put a plant the size of an elephant in the space the size of an African hedgehog? Navigating your way through the maze of gardening and landscaping options and maintenance for your home or office really is enough to drive anybody wild.
Hi, I'm Randy Quilici, owner of Quilici Gardening and Landscaping. If anyone knows it's a jungle out there, it's us. We've been offering complete maintenance and landscape installation for residential and commercial properties since 1982. It's easy to let things get overgrown and out of hand and keep putting off adding that special water feature you've wanted for so long. Let us help by taming and shaping your landscape into something you'll be proud of. Call me at 425-5269 or visit us at QuiliciGardening.com.
Quilici Gardening and Landscaping, because without them, it really is a jungle out there.
Hadassah helps Israel. Violence and terrorism have driven thousands of children and families from their homes in northern Israel to the safety and security of Hadassah's youth villages. Help Hadassah. Call 1-866-229-2395. It takes dollars to provide critical care along with trained staff and shelter. Please help Hadassah. Help these people. If you'd like to help Hadassah, call 1-866-229-2395. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Dr. Guy Peabody. If fear is preventing you from seeing the dentist, listen to how we've helped others with sedation dentistry.
Hello, I'm Pat. I've had probably 40 years of dental drama and trauma, and usually I would go in for a dental procedure only when it was an emergency. Probably had about a dozen different dentists. None of them were painless. I would quit. I wouldn't follow up my procedures, and it would lead from one disaster to another. I would highly recommend Dr. Peabody to anybody that has any tension or apprehension about a dentist. He's the man, and I'm a true believer.
We've helped hundreds of people wake up to a beautiful smile. Let us help you, too.
Call Dr. Guy Peabody at 457-0343. That's 831-457-0343. Find Dr. Peabody's sedation dentistry on the web at drpeabody.com or in the Yellow Pages. You, too, can wake up to a beautiful smile.
Hi, I'm Adolfo Garcia, owner of Community Tree Service. We offer dumpster rentals, tree work, demolition, and free estimates. For any of these services, please go ahead and call my office and either talk to Regina or Naomi at 763-2391. Thank you.
Are trees around your house looking strange, leaning in the wrong direction, blocking your sunlight, in danger of falling? Take care of this and call us, the professionals, Community Tree Service. We're licensed, insured, and we offer free estimates and are ever ready in emergency situations. We take pride in being reliable and will accommodate your needs with safe professional service and advice. Call our office today at 763-2391 or from Santa Cruz, 426-6340.
Climb a mountain, fish a stream, hike a trail, live your dream, play a sport, ski a slope or lake. We get outdoors for adventure's sake. Outdoor World gives you for adventure. Outdoor World outfits you with pride. Outdoor World knows the fun you're in for. Outdoor World for the great outside.
It's summer clearance time at Outdoor World with 30 to 70% off men's and women's shirts, tops, shorts, pants, swimwear, and more. Plus all the new clothes of fall are in, like fleece jackets, vests, and hoodies. And get $35 to $40 off Basque hiking shoes.
Running rapids is never boring. Set up camp and go exploring around the campfire when day ends. With your family or friends. Outdoor World gives you more adventure. Outdoor World outfits you with pride. Outdoor World knows the fun you're in for. Outdoor World for the great outside.
If someone should ask, tell them you heard it on AM 1080, KSCO.
What a great jingle that was for Outdoor World. And that's our guy, isn't it, Rick?
That's Mr. Will Strickland.
Yeah, golly gee. A super talented dude. Yeah. If I were a KSCO advertiser, I would talk with Will about having him do a jingle for me. So obviously that's what Outdoor World did, and he did a fabulous job. Hey, Rick.
Yes, sir.
What's it like being a celebrity these days?
I don't know what you're talking about.
I know. You're just getting all beet red for no reason. Look, for those of you who listen to the Saturday special but do not listen to our afternoon drive program because you didn't like Phil Henry. A lot of people didn't like Phil Henry. A lot of people did. But those who didn't got out of the habit of listening to the afternoon drive. So they might not know that you and Phil put on a great program in the afternoon. You know, ever since Phil Henry retired on June 24th, was it?
They are blind to the world.
Yeah. So you guys have a lot of fun and we're doing local radio. And sometimes you have an awful lot of fun and other times you're serious.
But and if they want to advertise, they can call you.
Sure. Michael Olson or you or anybody else around here, you know, because the name of the game is to get your message out and do it in a way that that is sort of unique and won't get lost with a bunch of others. And on radio, every ad is a full page ad. And speaking of full page ads, that's newspaper speak. And we do have someone on the line here, none other than Jeff Dunn and his orchestra. How are you, Jeff?
Good, and the orchestra's right behind me.
Yeah, boy, now, is it a secret who the orchestra is?
Yes, it pretty much is.
Why?
Why? Because there are confidentiality agreements that have been signed, and so, you know, it's limited who I can reveal and what I can reveal, but, you know, Michael, I always love coming on KSCO, so I'm happy to talk with you as much as I can.
Okay. Well, what can you tell us? Will you let us know more than you let than the Sentinel let us know this morning?
Well, we'll see. I'll tell you everything. I mean, you know, of course, in the Sentinel, they had to cut down what I told them, but I'll give you the background. And I have to think there's a little bit of a parallel here between me and you on this sort of deep interest in the paper. Because I remember seeing your picture in the radio club at Santa Cruz High and knowing that when KSCO came up for sale, you were just passionately motivated to get a hold of it.
Yeah.
So about 3 weeks ago when I first heard about the Sentinel coming up for sale, I immediately had a feeling that wouldn't it be great. But, of course, I don't have $30 million jangling around in my pocket.
So that's the price tag, is it?
I think, you know, to be honest with you, and it's very interesting, Michael, this thing is, the sale is even hush-hush. It was tough for me to get to the broker for Dow Jones. And the broker is not at Dow Jones. He is at J.P. Chase Morgan in New York City. Okay? And I had to qualify myself just to talk to him, just to make an inquiry. So it's tough getting info. I've talked to a lot of people now in the western states about the value of the paper. And the earliest guesses I was hearing were very high, anywhere from 55 to 60 million, which is about the range that the Monterey Herald sold for. But unlike the Herald, the Sentinel has had fairly significant declining revenues in the last several years.
As has every newspaper, am I wrong?
No, there, you know, some newspapers have had experienced growth, but that's in places where there's been a lot of growth, and where there's been sort of new commercial development taking place. So no, not all newspapers are declining. The newspaper business and newspaper readership in general is declining. So it's a declining institution. Okay.
Sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And
so you got to be able to get a deal if you're an investor in a
right.
and you're investing in something in an industry that's a declining industry.
Right.
And no one's going to argue with that. I mean, I certainly won't. I mean,
no, absolutely.
Then you got to be able to think you're getting a steal, right? I mean, I wouldn't expect what I do know about the Sentinel is that it sold for $15 million in 1982.
15 to 20.
Well, I heard it was 15 right on the money, but
yeah,
but
okay.
maybe my information is not exactly correct.
Well, it's close. That's exact. I mean, that's in this game, that's a very close range.
Uh-huh.
And so, in any event, Michael, the highest figure I was hearing was 60 and even upward to 65 million, which I thought was absurd. And then the lowest estimate that I heard was 25 million. And now most people are placing it in the $30 to $35 million range.
Mm-hmm.
So that right now is the best guesstimate of the range that I have.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
So what do you think is going to happen? Is it was I reading that there are basically two bidders, you know, your local group and the San Jose Mercury, basically?
Well, no, I think the owners of the Orange County Register have pretty much indicated that they have an interest as well.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
And the Mercury is not the Mercury. The Mercury is Media News, owned by William Dean Singleton out of Denver.
Oh.
And who just purchased the Mercury News this year. And Singleton owns a dozen papers in the Monterey and greater San Francisco Bay areas. The one large paper he doesn't own is the San Francisco Chronicle, which, of course, is still owned by the Hearst Company. But he's partners with Hearst in several of these other papers.
Hmm.
So, you know, we've definitely got some monopoly issues going on. The Attorney General of California said he was not going to rule against the sale based on monopoly. But I'm sure you know Clint Riley up in San Francisco, who venture capitalist up there, has filed a suit against Singleton. And
I don't know about that. Educate me as well as our audience on that.
Basically, what Riley is arguing is that the Hearst and Singleton groups, in their combined ownership of virtually every piece of major print media between North San Francisco Bay and King City, which they do own, with the exception of the Sentinel and a handful of smaller papers.
Californian? Californian?
I don't know if they own the Californian.
Excuse me, just a second. Jeff, Rick, is the clock correct in here, or is it?
Have 45 seconds on the nose.
45 seconds. Okay, so it's 15 seconds late. Yeah, Jeff, we want to hold you over into next hour. Can you do that?
I'm good. I'll hang with you.
And you can talk to some of the people who might want to call in.
Okay, sure.
That'd be great. So, but you can continue right now for another 30 seconds or so.
Well, all I want to say is that when the opportunity presented itself, I immediately talked to some people with means in the community and then contacted some potential outside investment firms who could help leverage the buyout. And so that's how we put at least this preliminary deal together.
And we'll find out more about that along with some talks about local media ownership next hour here on KSCO Santa Cruz. Salinas Monterey, here's Fox News.
Radio, I'm Karen Stewart. Breaking news from the Middle East this afternoon as Yemen's interior minister says authorities have arrested four al-Qaeda members who were planning to carry out attacks. And on the peace front, the Pakistani president and the Indian prime minister have both agreed to restart peace talks, talks that have been suspended since train bombings killed more than 200 in Mumbai in June. President Bush with a message to Congress. In his weekly radio address this morning, he puts two bills in front of Congress, one of which is a CIA program used for handling terror suspects.
The first bill would allow us to use military commissions to try suspected terrorists for war crimes. We need this legislation because the Supreme Court has ruled that military commissions must be explicitly authorized by Congress.
The president said it has saved American lives before and has helped to thwart planned strikes inside the U.S. At least 20 people dead in the latest violence in Iraq, including three car bombings today in Baghdad. Nearly two dozen other bodies were found strewn around the city, apparently victims of reprisal killings. Iraq's prime minister is begging his citizens to put their sectarian differences aside. The Vatican insists the Pope did not intend to offend Muslims when he quoted a 14th century Christian emperor who said the prophet Muhammad had brought the world only evil and inhuman things. The remarks have angered clerics around the Muslim world and has even caused Morocco to recall its ambassador to the Vatican. As feelings swirl around the remarks, one Muslim scholar, Dr. Azam Tamimi, comes very close to calling it a conspiracy.
George Bush, a few days ago, called Muslims fascists or associated fascism with Islam. In the Muslim world, nobody believes that this is a war on terrorism. Everybody believes that this is a war on Islam waged by George Bush, Tony Blair, and the likes. And then the pontiff comes with this statement at this time. It hasn't helped at all.
In retaliation, angry Muslims have left scorch marks and bullet holes in the walls of several West Bank churches. You're listening to Fox News Radio, fair and balanced.
Hey, I'm Bonnie Raitt. Remember how excited you were as a kid to go back to school at the end of the summer? Seeing old friends, making new ones, getting new books in a new locker, a clean slate. And music class, that special room where you went to sing and perform with your friends and learn all sorts of interesting stuff about great composers of instruments and different kinds of music. We remember our music teachers because they were so passionate about helping us learn to love music. They help spark a love for listening to notes and voices and rhythms that continues to enrich our lives even today. Know what? I bet your kids feel the same way about music class. Ask them and make sure they get involved with music in school this year.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, and the National Anthem Project, the campaign to restore America's voice through music education. Music, part of a sound education.
Government investigators say it may not only be a spinach processor in California as they look into a nationwide outbreak of E. coli. Other spinach producers are being investigated as well. The FDA even says other products could be implicated. One person has died so far, nearly 100 sickened by the bacteria. Now reported in 19 states, Wisconsin has had the most cases. This is Wisconsin's Governor Jim Doyle.
We are concerned, of course, primarily with younger children and older people who could be most adversely affected.
The FDA says several of the victims ate spinach packaged by Natural Selection Foods, but the FDA is now warning people not to eat any fresh spinach. A second autopsy on the body of Anna Nicole Smith's 20-year-old son, Daniel, whose death has been deemed suspicious.
Cyril Weck, the world-renowned pathologist who has worked on cases from Elvis to JonBenet Ramsey, is expected to fly from Pittsburgh to the Bahamas tonight and conduct an autopsy tomorrow on the body of 20-year-old Daniel Smith. We've been told by Cyril Weck's attorney that Weck doesn't personally know Anna Nicole Smith. And the question remains, will he or Anna Nicole release the findings of the second autopsy? And if so, when? Daniel Smith died early Sunday morning, less than 12 hours after he arrived at Doctors Hospital in the Bahamas to see his mother and his new baby sister. In Nassau, Todd Connor, Fox News Radio.
A Category 3 hurricane is heading toward Mexico's Pacific coast. Hurricane Lane is whipping the resort town of Mazatlan with high winds. It's the second hurricane to menace the region in the past 2 weeks. It's not clear where this one's going to make landfall. In Austin, Texas, people are paying their respects to former Governor Ann Richards. Richards died Wednesday at the age of 73. She'll lie in state at the Texas Capitol Rotunda today and tomorrow. And within 15 minutes, the tickets were gone as thousands lined up in Queensland, Australia. Australia, for a chance to attend Steve Irwin's public memorial next week. Only 3,000 people were lucky enough to get their hands on tickets. The crocodile hunter's wife will speak at the ceremony. I'm Karen Stewart, Fox News Radio.
We got music and weather for you here on KSCO.
Good morning. You are listening to AM 1080 KSCO Santa Cruz, AM 1340 KOMY Watsonville. I'm Rick O'Shea with an update on your Saturday morning roadways. Starting off on Highway 152, just west of Lover's Lane, there's a two-vehicle traffic collision. CHP is on scene. Northbound 101 at Morrow Road, still a vehicle in the center divide. CHP is on scene. And northbound 101 just north of San Miguel Canyon Road, again, a solo vehicle spin out into the center divider. 62 degrees at the broadcast station here in Santa Cruz. You are listening to AM 1080 KSCO Santa Cruz, AM 1340 KOMY Watsonville. Time now for hour two of the Saturday special with your host, MZ.
Hey, Rick, I understand you have that sexy broad who gives the hour two telephone jingle, right?
I do.
Not the broad, but the jingle itself.
Right? Yes. Would you like to hear her?
Yes,
okay.
Always.
Yeah. Oh, hello, darling. To hang up on you, but I'm sorry, baby, but I have to go. It's time for that wonderful record show. I'd love to visit, but you'll have to call back. KSCO has the inside track.
You've heard me say this before. I just always wonder what this woman looks like or sounds like now, if she's still alive. We should have a prize for someone who can produce this woman, and we could have her as a guest on the Saturday special.
I'm sorry, baby, but I really gotta go to KSCO Radio. Bye.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, that jingle was recorded in about 1953. So, you know, and she must have been like, I don't know, it sounds like a 27 to 33 year old voice then. That would be my guess. I have no idea. But if I'm right, so say it was 30 plus 50. So the person could be 80, 83 years old, you know, and what might she sound like today?
I wouldn't want to hear that jingle sound again today.
Rick, you're the best. You prove that you're the best this week, you know.
Well, I'm guessing she would sound like a crotchety old lady.
Okay, no, well, the reason I...
to be honest, I don't know if you'd want to hear her voice again.
Well, I was talking about the best, doing detective work. I mean, we heard something on Rush, and I called you and said, try to do this, and you did it really quick. So
uh-huh.
That was wonderful. So,
If I can find her...
Try to find her.
You said she was it was most likely recorded in Dallas or San Antonio?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think it was Pepper. I think it was the Pepper Jingle Company.
The Pepper Jingle
Not
Company.
Not Dr. Pepper, but just Pepper. I'm not positive. You know,
I'll see what I can do.
You could probably ask Don Husing, and he would be my first stop. I would ask Don.
I'll see what I can do.
And then see if we can somehow run this woman down if she's still alive. And get her on the Saturday. I will interview her for the full 2 hours and ask
her
about her life. And
I think that'd be great.
So it'd be just wonderful.
I'll see what I can do.
Thank you. Appreciate that. What we normally do is have a world premiere of Kay's commentary right now, and we don't have one. Now, we either genuinely do not have one or we mistakenly do not have one. I don't know which it is because I know that the last time Kay was in, she did a marathon. She did, I don't know, three or four or five of them that were supposed to play not concurrently, not simultaneously, but, you know, progressively. And maybe we've run through all of them, but I didn't think so. Anyhow, you don't have anything there, right? So
no,
so.
But I did find out where that liner came from.
Where the liner came from?
Yeah, from that woman.
Where?
It's the Salt and Pepper Jingle Company.
Salt and Pepper?
Salt and Pepper.
Seriously?
Yo, yeah.
You're not kidding.
No.
How'd you find that out so far?
I just did the Pepper Jingle Company. It came up in the 1960s, the three top jingle companies in the 1960s. Number one was the Salt and Pepper Jingle Company.
Well, maybe. Okay, well, yeah, so I guess on come the weekday, you can, you know, follow up on that or something. But the K's commentary that we have today is would have to be a rerun of or something, because we don't have any new one. Unless, of course, Kay is listening and has one that she wants to do live, she can call in. She knows the number. Let's see. Cynthia and Ed, who are both on hold here, I know I invited caller-driven topics, but before we let Jeff Dunn get away, I really want to talk to him about local media. So so you're going to have to wait just a little bit longer. We apologize for that. We're going to continue with Jeff Dunn, and if you want to wait, we'll definitely get to getting older and losing weight with Cynthia and Hollister, and capital punishment with Ed and Aptos. But right now, let's go back to our good friend Jeff, author of Santa Cruz is in the Heart and producer of a myriad of documentary films, both about Santa Cruz and about other topics and places. Hey there, Jeff.
Well, you know, I know that there's at least one lovely young woman in her 80s and another lovely young woman in her 90s listening to this show right now. And they both have beautiful voices. And I think they're not crotchety now. They still could sing lyrics like that and sound good. They got great voices. And you know what? My Uncle Johnny Lamb.
Yeah.
Was at KSCO in 1953 when that jingle came out.
Wait a minute. Johnny Lamb was at KSCO? Because I remember listening to Johnny Lamb on KMBY on Sunday mornings.
Yes, he was. Yeah. Yes, he was. But he was at KSCO first. Oh, he came up with Vernon. And I think he started there in 1952.
Well, son of a gun.
Yeah, I have a picture of him.
The place was only 5 years old then.
Yeah, I wasn't even born then, Michael.
I was negative. In 1952, I was plus one. Yeah.
There you go. I was minus three. So there you have it.
So anyhow, you and I are both proponents of locally owned and operated media. I had asked Patrice Edwards, who really is the only other owner of a media outlet besides us here in this area. Patrice owns Times Publishing Group, TPG, which owns the Aptos Times, Capitola Times, and Scotts Valley Times. And I had asked her to come on and maybe talk about the locally owned and operated media going the way of the 5-cent cigar. And she said she'd love to, but she wasn't able to this week. So maybe we'll do that sometime in the future. But you and I can do a little bit of that now, right?
Great.
Yeah. So what do you think, Jeff?
Well, I mean, look, I don't know the radio business like you do, and I don't know how many of the stations are locally owned here anymore in terms of radio.
Yeah.
Okay? But when I was growing up in this community, all media was locally owned. And what we've seen in the last 10, 15, 20 years, the Sentinel was sold to Ottawa in 1982. We've seen this transition from locally owned media to media that's owned by conglomerates and monopolies outside of the area. One of the problems you have with that is, let's be honest, local media is supported by local advertising revenues. And what that means is that virtually all of the advertising revenues profits for these outside media monopolies are leaving. It's taken right out of it. It's just sucking right out of the county.
Although I will say,
yeah,
in perusing the Sentinel,
mm-hmm,
now I could be wrong, it seems to me that they have more regional and national ads than local ads.
I don't think so.
Okay, I could be wrong on
I
that.
Don't think so, but
doesn't matter. What you said is still true.
I could tell you my family's advertised with you in the Sentinel for God knows how many years.
Yeah.
And, you know, bad revenues that come to you stay local, and the ones that go to the Sentinel, the profit margin leaves the community.
That, so, by the way, the ad from Gilda's,
yes,
you know, and Gilda is your aunt, and Big Boy Stagnaro is your uncle. That ad has not changed since 1991. Every time we ask Big Boy, hey, don't you want a fresh? Nope, I like it just the way it is, Michael. Just leave it. It's a great ad.
It is, but you know, after hearing that Will Strickland jingle, I thought, wouldn't it be great to have Big Boy and Gilda, who both have great voices, come on and do a jingle of their own?
Why not?
I mean, those two have killer voices. I think I may produce that for them.
Hey, good. All right.
I was just inspired, okay?
Terrific.
Only if my mother sings background.
That's terrific. Hey, listen, do you keep up with new media?
Sure.
Okay, I figured you might, but I wasn't sure.
Well, you know, for being an old dog, I try and keep
up. Nah, you're not an old dog. You're younger than me, and I'm not an old dog. Well, I'm getting there. But,
okay.
we have on the line with us now, I just see on the computer, from Sulphur Springs, Texas, Trucker Tom Wiles. Now, I don't know if you've heard of Trucker Tom Wiles, but he is one of the top podcasters in the country, if not the world.
Right.
Because he's been doing podcasting since the term was first coined, which is about 2 years ago, if I'm not
mistaken. An innovator.
He really is, and he's a guy who's got just the coolest life of zooming around all across, crisscrossing the country all the time and meeting interesting people. And he's got an opinion on just about everything. And here he has called in. I gotta be honest. I called Trucker Tom and left a message and said, we're going to be talking about new media and you should call in. How you doing, TT?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. You're on a cell phone, right?
That's right. I'm parked. I seem to be in a good cell location.
Well, so we got two celebrities who are I'm going to introduce to each other right now. Jeff Dunn is a celebrity here in California because he is from a long pioneer, Italian fishing family here in Santa Cruz, and is quite the accomplished. Should we say movie producer and author and entrepreneur, and now it looks I'm hoping he can put this deal together to keep the local newspaper, which has not been locally owned for 2.5 decades now, going on 2.5 decades, bring it back to local ownership. That'd be really, really cool. But you have enjoyed becoming a sort of a worldwide celebrity in your own interesting way. You've got people who are listening to you from the download statistics in the thousands, right?
Yeah, it's in the thousands. This really, really continues to amaze me. Podcasting, you know, that I first heard the term probably in October of 2004, and once I checked it out, I realized immediately that, you know, I was just compelled to do it, and I've been compelled to do it, continue with it, and it's absolutely amazing what has happened with it.
And you don't need, unlike us, you don't need no stinking transmitter, right?
That's right. It's all handled on the internet, and although, you know, I think there's always going to be a place for traditional radio, because one of the drawbacks of podcasting is that it's not live. The thing's recorded, it's put out there, and then it's kind of like an asynchronous type of communication.
Right.
But, you know, so live radio, you've got the live thing going out right then, so you can cover live news events and what have you.
Sure. No question. There will always be a place for local media, and that's what the conversation has evolved into. And I don't know if you get enough time. Maybe you're too involved in your podcasting, from going from town to town, to notice how many or how few locally owned media outlets there are. My guess is that there are very few, even in the world of news media, if print media. Am I right?
Yep. Yeah, I think you're right. I pretty much stopped listening to local radio. It used to be before the internet, before podcasting, and even before satellite radio. As I was driving around the country in my truck, I would have to, if I wanted to listen to radio, I'd have to change stations about every 30 minutes, either an FM station or an AM station. And it used to be you could get a really local flavor as you go through an area, as a particular area of the country. But in recent years, that changed, and it's all homogenized. It's all either you've got your talk channel, you know, which is usually a type, like Clear Channel or you know, and then you've got different types of music stations, you know, like a rock station or progressive rock or 80s or whatever it is. And the local flavor, for the most part, is gone. And, you know, I think that's kind of unfortunate that that happened.
And I do too, and I'm sure you would agree, right, Jeff? I mean, obviously that's why you're doing what you're doing with the local thing, and hopefully that'll succeed, right?
Well, absolutely, but I, like you, grew up listening to local radio, and you remembered where my Uncle Johnny was on when he was on KMBY or whatever. And I always love hearing, and I don't care if I agree with who's on or not, I love hearing local radio just like I love reading local newspapers or seeing real local television, because it reflects the culture and the community and the voices that live there, that work there, that operate there, that love there, everything else. And you know what? One of the things that's great about KSCO is that it's got that local flavor. And I got an email from our mutual pal Steve Hartman today up in Montana.
Yeah.
You know, Hartman and I disagree just about on everything, except we both love my Aunt Gilda, and we're both decent fish cutters. I used to love listening to Hartman because, you know, it was real. It wasn't homogenized.
Yeah.
It was the real deal.
Yeah, just like Tom.
Absolutely. Tom, where are you right now?
Right now I am in Sulphur Springs, Texas. It's sort of between Dallas and Texarkana. I'm on my way up into Illinois.
Got it. So you're heading north.
Well, right now I'm sort of heading northeast. More east than north right now.
No, I know right where we are. I got a sister-in-law in Dallas, so we get down there periodically.
And Tom has got a great website for those of you who haven't heard it or seen it. It's truckerphoto.com. Truckerphoto.com. And that's where you can subscribe to his Trucker Tom's Daily Podcast. Occasionally you do a video podcast too, right, Tom?
Yeah, I take videos, and I've got there's links to everything on truckerphoto.com. I'm actually podcasting from Podshow. That's another website. But there's a link near the top of the page of truckerphoto.com that'll take you to the podcast. And a lot of people, you know, the name podcast, kind of unfortunate. Of course, it had to be named something, but a lot of people hear the term podcast, and they think, well, you have to have an iPod. Well, no, you don't. All you got to do is just click on the file and listen to it right on your computer. You know, an MP3 player, iPod or whatever is optional. You know, that just makes it great because then you go for a walk or whatever.
Sure.
And listen to the stuff of your, you know, whatever you want. One of the great things about podcasting is that it's just real people out here that are compelled to do it, and you know, so you've got real people, you've got real communication going on. It's very interactive. I, as a podcaster, you know, really pay attention to what my audience, you know, because I get a lot of email, and sometimes people send voice comments.
Yeah, even though you're not really live, there is a very special, strong connection between you and the audience as a podcaster, right? Just like live talk radio.
Absolutely.
You know? Yeah.
In fact, it's probably even stronger because what I've found is that, you know, participating in podcasts, it's all about kind of like social network to a large extent and really making friends. Me as a podcaster making friends with the people in my audience and vice versa, and everybody begins to affect everybody else that's part of, you know, part of a podcast community. And it's just really, it proves to me that in the end it's all about the relationship that sort of gets established, and that's where the real value of it is.
Well, no matter where you would be come the end of this month, on your trucker job, you're going to see to it that you're at a particular place called Ontario, California, on or about the 28th. Am I right?
Yeah, I'm going to try to be there on the 28th.
And I will definitely be there because this is the second annual Portable Media Expo. This is only the second of this brand new industry, and this is where Tom and I met. We met on the telephone because I read a story in the In-Flight magazine about Tom about a year ago, And where we actually met was at the first annual podcast or portable media convention. And that happens, I believe, on the 29th and 30th of this month. Am I right?
That is correct.
In Ontario. So if you guys, if anybody out there is interested in learning about, you know, where the future is headed, and, you know, broadcast radio is part of the future, too, because we have our own podcasts on KSCO at our website that people can subscribe to. They're not always totally up and running, but as time goes on, it's going to be pretty tight here.
This is the 5-Minute Service on Fox News Radio.
Well, I don't want to hear the 5-Minute Service on Fox News Radio. That's I know. It's my fault. I left the pot up. Okay. So anyhow, so just wanted to give that little blurb, and so local media has been going the way of the five cent cigar, but maybe not. Maybe it's going to start to come back. Hopefully, Jeff. Right.
Well, look. There's a possibility that people are going to be able to notice the difference between what I would call Wonder Bread media and home baked bread media.
Oh, I like that.
You like that?
I like that.
Take it, babe.
Okay.
And as long as I can steal from you, you can always steal from me.
Yeah, no, it's just a straight giveaway. Straight giveaway.
Well, in any event, I mean, that really is the difference. And, you know, local bakeries are coming back. And I hope that local media is coming back. You know, there are two very interesting cases in California going on right now with print media. And local ownership. In Santa Barbara, you had a millionaire buy the Santa Barbara Daily, and she immediately got in there and started mucking with editorial and creating problems in the newsroom. And they've got some real problems down there now with that enterprise. One of the things I wanted to make clear is, you know, we're going to keep a firewall between the local ownership group and the editorial section of the paper. I mean, you just need
to. Oh, shucks. It means you can't buy your way as an advertiser into what?
Sure you can.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I'm going to cut to the chase. But, you know, okay. And then up in Eureka, Singleton came up and bought the Daily and changed it so much that an alternative Daily sprouted. Now, it's tough to sprout a Daily in a local media area right now. But a very wealthy business person came in and funded the enterprise, and they're going neck and neck right now up there. So, you know, those two things are playing a factor in how we're moving forward. We don't want to, you know, completely destroy the editorial integrity of the Sentinel. It's been in operation for 150 years, and it's an institution in this community, and we respect that. Conversely, if if someone like Singleton were to come in here without any sense of local partnership or respect for the community, Santa Cruz is a unique and isolated enough media market for something else to spring up in that vacuum.
Well, I got a question for both of you, Kier. I'm really interested in your response to this question, because this is what I understand is up before the FCC pretty much as we speak here, and that's dropping the cross-ownership, newspaper and radio and television station cross-ownership rules, which have been in effect for probably 30 years.
How long have you been in now?
How long have I been in the business?
No. How long have those rules been in effect?
I'm sorry, Jeff, I should know, but I believe it's around 30 years.
Okay, that sounds right.
Because it used to be that, because in fact the Santa Cruz Sentinel did own this radio station, or the same ownership. Exactly.
Well, I think Vernon had ownership in the paper.
That I didn't know.
Well, I live right up the street from Vernon's old place here. And the Sentinel, of course, was part ownership of KSCO, but there was some reciprocation with Vernon and the paper, and of course that ended completely. I think you're right about that time frame. I think it was sometime in the
early 1970s. Now they're talking about making that possible again. And is that a good thing or a bad thing? Should a local daily newspaper be able to own a local radio station, or vice versa? Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Is that good or bad for the community, or does it, or neither?
You know, since there's very little local ownership anywhere, and if you could have a consolidation of services, I wonder if it might not be a good thing. It made me, when just talking with you, I thought, boy, wouldn't it be great to have a multimedia group here that was able to communicate through various media rather just than just through print or radio or TV. And as we all know, all three of us know, the internet is where all communication is going.
It's convergence. It's convergence land.
It's all about convergence.
Yeah.
And if you don't, you're missing the point. Now, the Sentinel was late to the game, really, in getting a website going. You know, Dan Pulcrano of Metro San Jose had a website. He was one of the leading guys to get a website up in this area.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think you got to be on the cutting edge of media, not just your own media. You have to be creative, especially on the internet. Michael, you've been, obviously Tom's been, and any media group, I don't care if it's television, print, radio, what have you, has to get cutting edge with electronic media.
Well, I appreciate the kind words. In fact, we did have one of the first probably 10 radio station websites in the whole world. Not that we've done much with it, I hate to say. I mean, we've been a little innovative, but nothing compared to what we could have and should have and, you know, should and plan to do with our website. It's just that, you know, we just don't have the resources to, you know, to maintain the thing the way it should be. But as time goes on, we'll see how that
Michael,
that changes.
Michael, do you have any idea of why they changed those rules 30 years ago?
Well, concentration of control of media is considered a bad thing. It has to do with monopoly.
See, back then, you had these long-standing newspapers that had been founded in the 1800s. Most newspapers in this country were founded at some point in the 1800s. West of the Rockies, in California, they were all founded right after 1850, okay? Almost every local newspaper in the state, and they were owned by long-standing families or long-standing family partnerships that basically had monopolies in every community. Many of them, like with the Sentinel, like with some of the other young TV stations that started up, were then owned and operated by those same families. So you had a monopolization of voice in various communities. So they wanted to break that up. But now what you have is the homogenization of voices beyond community control, and maybe by owning a local radio station and a TV station and or a newspaper together, you can get back to some sort of local voice.
Gee, so 1 + 1 could equal 3 and can still be good for the community, huh?
Well, sure. The difference today is that we have the internet, and that's breaking monopolies all over the place. So if they were to relax those rules at this point, it's possible that the monopoly that existed way back when would have a hard time being a monopoly.
Okay, I'm all for it then. I just became for it. At the beginning of this broadcast, I was against it, but now I'm for it.
Yeah, I think we've got very different circumstances today than we did 30 years ago. As Tom indicated, all bets have been off with what's happened with the internet.
The internet is the great equalizer. It really is. Now, one of these days, I want to get that Peggy lady from Cruise IO on as a guest, because she and I had an interesting, very short phone conversation several months back,
mm-hmm.
in which I was commiserating with her and she with me about how the big companies are taking over everything. And I said, "Come on, Peggy, how can the big companies take over the internet?" And they said, "You'd be surprised by controlling the gateways, by controlling,
yep.
you know, the access and so forth." So, yeah, I mean,
there's another group. They were Cruise IO, Peggy and her husband Jeff, been very innovative in starting up this access to the internet here in Santa Cruz.
Yeah,
and we're fortunate to have that.
Yep.
But they struggle against big corporate concerns like theirs,
which is what we do all the time.
It's the exact same struggle.
It's really, and the struggle is the struggle. You know where the real struggle is, guys? The struggle is not with the programming, because we don't have any problem attracting the program. People want to listen to us because we talk local stuff and the other people don't. It's as simple as that. Yeah, we have some national headliners like Limbaugh and Savage and O'Reilly to, you know, as anchor tenants, I guess, but we are largely locally produced programming, right, Rick? I mean, that's what we do, right? I mean, that's
absolutely.
That's what we're proud of, and we'd like to do more of it. But where we really are hurt badly is by the ability to attract a large advertising sales staff. Because most people tend to want to work for the bigger companies because they think, and they're probably right, that they could make a better living by doing that than by working for a smaller company. And I guess that's the problem everywhere. But
well, you also have the added problem here, Michael, and it's very real, about what Santa Cruz County has become. Back in the 1950s and 60s, someone could earn a living at KSCO and be able to not only afford rent in this community, but afford a down payment on a home and buy a home here. Everyone that you and I grew up with in this community, essentially, was able to afford their own home, was able to afford housing, okay? Bar none, if you think of all the kids we grew up with, their parents, whether they were working for PG&E, the phone company, cutting fish at the wharf, they were able to own their own home. Now people aren't able to afford to live here. So it's made getting people like that all the more difficult to obtain, to get people to do ad sales, et cetera. It's hard to keep staff here.
And actually, to tell you the truth, I think being in a business where you have to rely on selling advertising sucks, because 9 out of every 10 new businesses that are created now are advertising-based business model businesses. It's crazy. They're not making more advertisers. They're just cutting up the pie thinner and thinner and thinner. So anyhow, I really enjoy this discussion about media. Our good friend Soquel Bob is on the phone who wants to talk about media. So we're going to put him to the head of the line here and welcome Soquel Bob. And don't let your meatloaf, Bob. Hello.
Hello?
Yeah, you're on.
Hi, Mike. Hi, Jeff.
Bob, great to hear your voice.
Great to hear your voice, old buddy. I wanted to ask you a question about media in general. Maybe this isn't part of the discussion, but what do you think about the allegation of the liberal media? When you hear the liberal media, what do you think?
What do I think?
Yeah, what's your opinion?
You know, I listen to all sorts of media, and Bob, you and I go back to the 1968 Bobby Kennedy campaign here in Santa Cruz County, and that's getting almost 40 years now, all right? So I'm not afraid. I've been the black sheep of my family being a Democrat my whole life. Okay?
You're not the black sheep of my family.
I know that, but my point being that, as Michael knows, as you know, I have always loved engaging political discussion from the far left to the far right and everything in between. And it's gotten me in trouble with those on the left who have been offended, for instance, that I would always participate on KSCO or write different things or engage different things.
Yeah, you've come pretty close to being ejected from the political left insiders club, huh?
Oh, boy, that hurts.
Me too. We're in the same boat in that.
You are in the same boat.
And you know what? Who wants to be part of a junta? Really? I mean, who wants to be part of that kind of a club?
Yeah, because you guys are both reasonable. Now, listen.
I'm not reasonable.
Yeah, you are. Yeah, you are.
Come on. Okay. Don't spread that rumor.
All right, Bob. I'm sure if you're not interested in Trucker Tom's answer to your question, I am. Go ahead, Trucker Tom.
Okay. What was the question?
How many truckers does it take to change a light bulb?
I have no clue.
Bob, who Soquel Bob, who was our high school government teacher. He was yours too, right, Jeff?
No. I actually had the late Mr. Wright.
Well, Jeff went to Soquel High.
Oh, sorry about that.
I went to a real high school.
He went to school. He was a classmate of my daughter Dionne.
Okay, listen, Bob Listener wants to know if there is such a thing as the liberal media, or if that's all a bunch of hooey. Now, what do you think, Trucker Tom?
Well, I think that there's a liberal culture.
in the national media, especially, to listen to the news instead of simply standing on the street corner and saying I was here, this is what happened. They're a lot of times you're getting an opinion. They're reporting just enough information so you'll come to their conclusion. And so I don't think it's a liberal quote unquote conspiracy, but there is definitely a problem with it. And that's why I think that a lot of the big newspapers are losing subscribers. New York Times, LA Times, they're having to lay people off.
Hey, Jeff, are you sure you want to do that deal in light of what Trucker Tom just said? And he knows. I mean, he's got the pulse.
I think that if a newspaper, any newspaper would. Now, the only exception, of course, is USA Today, which is, I think they're doing okay. But a local newspaper, even a big local newspaper, or a smaller one, if they would simply report the news and, political viewpoint, but simply report the news without a twist, I think that there was a paper like that, if it was run properly, could gain market share.
Right. Okay. Great, but you definitely think that there's a liberal media. Okay, what about you, Mom? Mom did Kay did come to the radio station.
There she is.
There's absolutely no question about it. All of our media is spin to the local side.
Except us.
I think it was Trucker Tom who just said that we would need a media that doesn't interpret the news. You just have to tell the news. And we don't have that kind of media anymore in our country. Everything is interpreted by the person who reads the news.
And not only interpreted, but good news. There's a lot of good. There's just as much good news out there as there is bad news.
Maybe more.
But we're not talking about good and bad. It's the way it's interpreted by the person who's in charge of reading.
No, we are talking about, and you've said that in your commentaries before. Why doesn't the news media report all the good things that are going on overseas in the war?
Well, they put them in the back of the page if they put it at all.
That's what I'm going to say. There's a lot of things that simply don't get reported or they get underreported.
Exactly.
And it ends up on the front page and then the headlines at the top of the hour is just, this is bad, that's bad, humanity.
Okay.
And it's all by design.
Purgatory, so on.
Rich and Salinas is on, has been waiting a while, wants to talk about Air America. So hang on, Trucker Tom, don't go away. Hang on, Jeff. Let's bring on Rich and Salinas. You're on, Rich.
Hi. I heard, I think it was on Rush Limbaugh the other day, that Air America is looking at filing bankruptcy. So I was wondering how that affects you guys with the Air America.
Should we tell? Okay.
Of course.
I had made the decision the day before that we gave 45-day notice to Air America. We've given 14 months in the most liberal town in the country. It makes Berkeley look right-wing. And Air America has not worked. We KOMY have been a complete failure with Air America in Santa Cruz and the Monterey Bay area.
But Michael,
and it took us a long time to figure that out. But that's the way I'm wording it. We've been a failure.
Yeah, but
like
we gave it our best shot.
What'd you say, Mom?
I said we gave it our best shot.
We did give it our best shot.
We gave them the whole station.
Well, we gave them the whole station for the last month or two. Before that, it was prime time. It was 9 hours out of the whole station, but it wasn't the entire station.
And Michael, my question to you is, and you did give it a fair shot. You and I talked about it before you brought it in. You asked me what I thought.
Yes.
And I you remember I told you I wasn't sure it would work here.
Yep.
My question is, that was kind of the perfect ID'd liberal media, right?
Yep.
And it didn't work.
Yeah.
Why do you think that?
Oh God! Don't get me started.
I need.
I need 2 hours myself with no callers at all to go through that.
How about I come in,
Jeff? Why don't you tell us why?
No, Jeff. What I'd love to do, Michael. How about I come in one day, I'll host and ask you questions, and you can tell me the 2-hour story.
That's
I'd love
fine.
To hear your analysis about it.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm happy to volunteer to do that.
All right. Okay.
I'm back in town, and I'm back healthy enough, so.
Well, Jeff, you're on the air right now. Maybe you can tell us in about 2 or 3 sentences why what we didn't work.
Well,
in Santa Cruz.
I just felt, as I told Michael when he first called me about it, that there would not be a sufficient advertising base coming out of what is a very limited liberal business community in this town. And I just didn't think it would work here. And apparently it did not. I haven't got to talk to MZ since we had that initial conversation. But I just didn't think it would work. And I didn't think, and I told Michael, I thought it was going to have troubles throughout the country.
Well, evidently it is.
Yeah, you were absolutely right.
I'm a prophet.
And we figured that even if it had troubles throughout the country, it would work here. Boy, was I wrong. So
I will say this, and if Bob's still on the air, he knows that too.
Yeah, he's probably listening. He's not on the line with us. But
okay. That progressive businesses in this community often don't put their money where their mouth is. And I think that's exactly what I told you. And I said, really, there aren't that many progressive businesses in this community. You've got a progressive town.
Wait a minute, Jeff.
Yeah?
Are you saying that none of these progressive businesses support the Sentinel? I don't think that's true.
No. But what I said is they don't put their money where their mouth is.
Well, so that would support it with money. Don't they take ads out?
What?
In the Sentinel?
To a certain extent, I mean, I have today's Sentinel here with me, and I don't see a lot of progressive advertising in that paper today. I don't see a whole lot of local advertising, period, in there.
Oh, I think there's enough so that small businesses can stay alive.
Right. No, and they do, but I'm just saying there's of progressively owned businesses, I don't see a lot of advertising in there, Kay, today.
Well, you know, Jeff, it's
fact,
sort of after the fact, it doesn't matter. We tried it, and it didn't work, and so we'll just move on.
Yeah.
And we actually
went 2 months without putting Kay's commentaries on KOMY because it was offending the listeners to KOMY. But now they're back on.
Get them back on. And here you go. You know, I have, as Kay knows, she and I have disagreed on a few issues over the years.
Yes, I still like you.
But thank you, and I like you as well, and respect you. And it's great to have different voices being able to share their views in a community. And it's just refreshing to have that kind of alternative voices. And I want to say this. I know that that KSCO has always had an open door to progressive voices in this community, mine included, and I've
That's
been grateful
right.
for that. But what's interesting is a lot of times people from that community don't want to go on KSCO.
Well,
and that's because there's not a belief in letting all points of view air here, and it's just got to. That has to be the atmosphere, I think, for any media in the community. When I was executive director of community television, I got a call from a well-known progressive who was complaining about the fact that we were allowing religious groups in the community to have a voice on the television.
Don't you have to? Isn't that part of the franchise?
Well, A, you have to, but B, it's the right thing to
exactly.
do. And you know what?
We don't have to do that,
right.
but I agree with you that it's the right thing to do, and we always have.
And it's part of people in this community. And, you know, one of the troubling things to me, and maybe I was blessed, Michael, maybe I was blessed because I grew up the black sheep in my own family by being a Democrat. We would have our political discussions at the table, in the fish market, wherever we were. And, you know, good Italians, we definitely get fired up occasionally. But we all loved each other, and after the party was over, we were all back to being you know, loving family members again. So I grew up in an atmosphere
where there was definitely political contention, where there was definitely a respect for other perspectives. But that if you disagreed with somebody over the widening of a highway or whether or not a bike path should go through a field, whatever the issues are.
Yeah, you're not going to get poked in the eye.
You might get poked in the eye in my family because we did like to fight, but but the next morning you still loved each other and spoke with each other, and then you went back and did it again. In this community, too many bridges get burned.
You have to tell that, Jeff.
Yeah.
You're speaking to the choir. You should be telling that to your liberal cohort.
Well, I'm.
They're the ones that.
I was out of town 2 weeks ago. I got a call from my mom saying, "Oh, Jeff, you're on the front page of the Sentinel because you happened to disagree with somebody, and you made a point about that." And you know what? I have zero fear about doing that. I've told the progressive community knows where I'm coming from that way, and if they don't like it, tough. That's just tough.
Very much.
And the same with the conservative community. If they don't like it, tough. But here's one thing that's never going to happen. I have a huge family in this community. I have loving aunts, uncles, and about 220 cousins, first, second, third extended cousins. I got a lovely wife and children. They're going to love me no matter what my point of view is. So I don't really care if I ruffle feathers with my perspective. What I want to say is that I really believe in the First Amendment. I'm passionate about the First Amendment. I'll defend it till the day I die. And if people in this community don't like it, tough. But I am going to support freedom of expression in whatever medium there is.
My mother is ready to explode. Her mic has been turned off. Go ahead, Ma. Talk.
Jeff, yeah. It's nice to hear all these things about your family. However, the most important issue at this point is I know that Michael and I and many other people would be very pleased if your group buys the Sentinel. But if you do, I would hope very much that the next time there's a gay parade, that you would give it a respectable amount of space in the newspaper. But I would also hope that when we're talking about not this time vets and they have a parade, that it would not be totally ignored like Tom Honig and the newspaper did a couple of months ago. See, that's not a nice thing to do. That's dirty pool when you just expose the things that you want to be exposed and not give equal time to the other side of the story. Okay?
I think they're going to do that.
Yeah, and you know what? I believe that all aspects of our community need to be reflected in the newspaper. I'm getting ready to go down to the county fair today with my kids, and my daughter's performing there tomorrow. And one of the things I always love about the county fair is that you see so much of the community down there. And it's also great that it's in Watsonville. It sort of forces people to go down to Watsonville and engage the agricultural underbelly of our community. Okay? And I think that that's where the real Santa Cruz community often expresses itself. Thousands, tens of thousands of people go down to the fair to enjoy and celebrate our community. That's kind of the celebration I want people to think about when they think about this community.
Well,
and you don't see a whole lot of that reflected in the media. And I go down there. I must run into 50 or 60 people I know every time I'm down there. And that's what Santa Cruz County is to me.
Jeff, we've got a caller, Chris in Capitola, who knows why Air America failed. Go ahead, Chris. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing today,
good.
Michael?
Great. And you're talking with Trucker Tom and Jeff Dunn and MZ and Kay and the entire KSCO audience. Go.
Well, hi, everybody. Yeah, you know, it's one thing to be liberal, you know, it's another thing to be nuts. You know, and I think Air America is more nuts, you know, than liberal. And I think that's part of the reason that they're not supported by the local community, which is very liberal.
really, I want to tell you a little bit about my story of coming to Santa Cruz about 7 years ago. When I came to Santa Cruz, I was actually a Democrat. And really, the main reason for that is because I've always been union, come from a union family, and we always believe that, like, you know, Democrats were in favor of the working class, all of that. And when I started up a business in Santa Cruz, I wanted to go union. Well, other people in the area told me, well, unions don't do well in Santa Cruz. I thought, well, how could that be? Because Santa Cruz is an extremely liberal place. Of course, they're going to support union companies. And what I found is that liberals are support union when they're on the receiving end of it. But when it comes time to pay out, it's like if it comes from China, if it's provided by illegal workers, whatever's the cheapest price is good. And actually, since I've been here, I've actually changed, you know, my my party affiliation. And KSCO has done a lot to help me really realize, you know, what the truth is out there. And that's that liberals talk a good game, but when the money's on the table, they run and hide. And that's the truth.
Yes, it is. I totally agree with you.
Okay. Hey, well, I'd like to talk more with you, Chris. But you know what? And Jeff, geez, you know, there's less than 4 minutes left. We got to do a commercial, at least two commercials.
Well, go get your commercials. I'm going to say goodbye. I'm going to get back with my family here.
Best of luck. Thanks for being with us.
And thank you. And we'll talk more, Michael.
Right. Hope you can
Bye.
Deal. Thanks, Chris and Capitola. Thanks, Jeff Dunn. Trucker Tom is still with us. Ed is still with us. Oh, God. And Ma, are you going to – how long is your commentary?
No?
Too late?
No time.
All right. We'll do the commercials anyhow. We'll be back here.
Hello, I'm Tony Tomeo, horticulturist with New Image Landscape. Working with consistent quality and genuine concern for each landscape, New Image Landscape Company cares for municipal, commercial, estate, and HOA landscapes from Monterey to Contra Costa counties. Landscape design and tree service by professional arborists are also available. Call us at 510-226-9191 to meet with one of our knowledgeable staff and give your property a new image. New Image Landscape.
I hear it from customers all day long about calling the 800 numbers for satellite service. They can't get the same person twice, don't know what country they're calling, and the person on the phone doesn't understand what they want. At Taylor Vision, I can help. The promotions are the same from us, but we can service you better. With 25 years of experience, Taylor Vision, 476-1636 or 252-0441.
Issues and entertainments. That's local news talk radio for the Monterey Bay, KSCO.
Okay, Ed, you're on the air. Thanks for waiting for an hour and three quarters.
Well, you know, my story's not germane to what your current line is.
That's why I didn't put
you. If you had me on at the first hour, I would have been able to make sense. But as far as the liberal media goes, that you look at the ownership and they control the thing. There's a talking about, I don't know if you listen to Tom Hartman at all or even catch him at all, but you should listen to him. Jeff, if he's still listening, he should read a Tom Hartman book or two, because our
No, Tom is great. We tried to get Tom on this station, and he was not available to us, unfortunately.
Well, he's affiliated with Air America, so maybe you can.
No, we can't, but that's okay. Air America's gone. They're going to be dead any minute.
Michael, let me make my point.
Yeah, go ahead.
The point is that if you have, you even alluded to it, is you can't attract a sales force, then you have people out here typically that the Santa Cruz market is tilts toward the liberal, if you would. So it would seem like you'd want to, talk to attract liberal people.
It didn't work.
But your advertisers need to get those so that you'd be getting those people. Maybe they're just not, the liberal people aren't listening to your radio station.
Well, a lot of people were listening to KOMY, including you and your wife, as I understand it.
Oh, yeah, we were listening to that. Yeah. I mean, we were really surprised when we didn't hear it on KOMY. We heard it through another radio station that, you were dropping Air America.
Right. Well, but anyhow.
Do I have time for my quick story?
Well, 30 seconds.
Back in the olden days when they used to have public hangings in Britain, that when they were hanging a guy for pickpocketing, the pickpockets would be out in the audience picking people's pockets. So it really, that wouldn't seem like the point of that it's a very much of a deterrent having a gruesome public execution.
Well, it does deter people from paying attention to their pockets. Okay, never mind.
Bye-bye.
Okay, there goes Ed.
But I'd really like, I think if I'd like Jeff to get on and interview, it'd be interesting.
We'll do that maybe in 2 or 3 weeks, okay? That'd be great.
I'd really appreciate that.
I'd love to be someone's interview. I wish someone would interview me. I always do the interviewing. Okay, thanks, Ed. Talk to you. Okay. Hey, I think that's it. Rick, you've been great, as always. Thank you very much. We'll see you maybe next week, certainly in a couple weeks, okay?
Absolutely.
All right, so I guess it's the That's All Folks time, huh? Yeah.
It's time for That's All Folks.
This is AM 1080 KSCO Santa Cruz, AM 1340 KOMY Watsonville. It's 12 noon.
Fox News Radio, I'm Jay Metzler. Hurricane force winds now hitting Mexico's Pacific coast as Hurricane Lane starts making its way toward land. Lane already strengthening to a dangerous Category 3 storm, winds 125 miles an hour.